Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is a very well-known figure in East Tennessee and Southwest Virginia. He is well-known for his work as President and Chief Executive Officer of the Kingsport Chamber of Commerce. He is equally well-known for his military service. Miles Burdine is a retired colonel with the United States Marine Corps. His deployments took him to war zones 3 times. Our subject today is Miles Burdine's very personal journey as he deals with post-traumatic stress disorder. Miles Burdine, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Yes, sir. Thanks for inviting me.
You have a fascinating story, and I know you feel the same way as I do. The reason really for doing this interview is to tell this story in the hopes that it might help somebody else.
That's absolutely right. So I've had some people tell me that, in fact, I was riding today with a couple of fine gentlemen, Dave McCauley and Mitch Walters, to go visit Camp Friendship. And we got on that subject. And I told them, I said, I've been very public about my diagnosis of PTSD. And, you know, they were quiet like everybody is. But I've had some people say, don't talk about that because somebody's going to think you're crazy. And I said, I don't care if they think I'm crazy. What's important is I tell the story. I'm a public figure. And by doing so, I'm very confident. I'm very confident that I'm saving lives. In fact, Dr. Tom Rogers has told me that, and others have told me that. So nothing's going to stop me from telling the story.
That's great. Let's go back to October of 1983 in Beirut, Lebanon, where the bombing of the Marine Corps barracks took place. Tell me where you were, what you saw, and how you reacted.
Well, a lot have forgotten this, but in April 18th of 1983, just before the unit I was with, which was Battalion Landing Team 1-8, there was an attack on the embassy it was a car bomb. But a lot of people forgot about that. But unfortunately, what that did is that gave our enemies confidence that we were vulnerable. Well, we arrived late May of 83, and not long after that, I was sent to the embassy with about another 100 Marines and armor and all the weapons we needed to protect the embassy, because once on April 18th, once it was blown up, the British said, come live with us, and the British later regretted that because that invited more attacks. But we repelled all those attacks. I mean, I had 100 well-trained Marines, and they were killers when they needed to be, and they were defenders when they needed to be. Well, on the 23rd of October, 1983, is a Sunday morning in Beirut. It was Saturday night here, and we slept a little late on Sunday mornings. It was about 6:20 in the morning, and a blast took place. And I was on the fourth floor, sleeping on the roof of the fourth floor of another building, within the compound I was protecting. And the blast woke me up, and there's a Marine standing over there. I said, "What the heck was that?" And he said, "Sir, I don't know, but that's the biggest cloud of smoke I've ever seen since we've been here," and the loudest boom. And right after that, another one. And that ended up being the French headquarters. So I got dressed, ran down as fast as I could to the my compound, and started listening to the radio chatter of the other company commanders who were at the site and at the airport. And they said, Battalion Landing Team, the BLT building is gone. And I said, "Say again, over?" And they said, "It's gone. It's flattened." I get choked up just thinking about it. Damn, Iranians murdered 241 Marines that day. So my reaction was, get ready, because we're going to be receiving a lot of bodies. We're going to be receiving a lot of wounded. And we did, because there simply was not enough room on the ships that were stationed in the Mediterranean. Of course, helicopters immediately came in, were taking the bodies to the ships, and many of the wounded came to me, because there's a hospital directly behind our compound, and we would station a Marine not only doing his regular duty, but a Marine was stationed outside every room where there was a wounded Marine. You asked my reaction. My reaction was, I was so goddamn angry. that those son of a bitches wouldn't fight us like they should fight us. And I started doing things like telling my Marines. I said, anybody drives past our compound, you aim in on them. Don't shoot them unless you're supposed to shoot them. And they'd take hangman's nooses hanging off the front of their armor. And I remember the ambassador sending word out to me saying, you need to quit doing that. You're scaring them. And I said, that's what I want to do. And I don't take orders from you. I take orders from my BLTCO, who, by the way, is badly wounded. Not only was I angry, but I was also trying to take care of the wounded and identifying the dead and trying to find out some of my best friends. Were they alive? My best friend in the Marine Corps, Colonel Chuck Dallahy, who came here on 4th of July weekend. We got to spend time together and reminisce. And I couldn't find him. There were no lists. And the lists that were coming out didn't have him on the list. I thought, oh, my God, he's still buried alive. I finally found him. He was in Germany. And I said, damn, I'm glad you're alive. He said, well, me too. I said, well, what do you remember? He said, I woke up on the ship. I looked up. I saw a basketball goal. I thought, man, I've been playing a lot of basketball. I'm just exhausted. And he said almost immediately a priest came over and read his last rites to him. And then that's the last thing he remembered until he woke up in the hospital in Germany. All the emotions that you might imagine went through me, and some are still there. Many are still there.
You had deployments after Beirut. Was that the one that had the deepest impact on your psyche?
Well, it's what started it, but I had no idea there was something wrong with me. Now, we went to Desert Storm. I was a commanding officer of the infantry unit that's in gray. It was in Johnson City at that time. And that deployment was relatively easy compared to all others because the war was over so quick. And we did some things that, I mean, I was proud we did. And I brought all Marines back home safely. I was very proud of that. But the war is over so quick that, we're waiting on a plane ride home. And I didn't find out until I got home some of the Marines that I served with, which that's their picture right there, told me how scared some of them were. I said, of what? They said, gas. And I thought, well, but they never told me. I mean, they're not going to tell me they're scared of anything because that's not what Marines do. And but I thought back about, I can see why you were scared. I wasn't scared. It wasn't because I was brave. I just didn't think about being scared. I don't know why. I just didn't. But you ask, my next deployment was in 2005, 2006. And I was recruited by Colonel Paul Breyer, who I'd served with two other times before. He retired as two-star general. He called me, he says, hey, I got a unit. You want to go? And I'd been waiting on my father to die because he had Lou Gehrig's disease, just a matter of time. And once he was gone, I was waiting on a call like that, and I got it. And he said, you want to go? And I said, yeah, what are we going to do? Because I'm a grunt. He said, we're going to do civil affairs. I said, what's that? He said, we're going to build government. He said, we're going to hold elections. We're going to hire police chiefs. I said, well, I know how to do that. He said, I know. That's why I called you. We went to Camp Lejeune. We trained for a month before we actually deployed. Colonel Breyer and our operations officer, Lieutenant Colonel Krizan, go to our site where we're going to be living, working on a daily basis, which is in Ramadi, the Al Anbar province. And my job was to work with the governor, take care of him, keep him alive, teach him about building a government, teach him about courage, et cetera, et cetera. And but when Colonel Breyer came back, he took me to the chow hall and he says, just you and me. It's okay. Yeah, what you got? He said, I want you to know that you're going to be living and working in the most violent place in the world. You're going to get attacked just about every day. I said, well, we are, aren't we? He said, nope. You and your Marines are going to be at the government center in downtown Ramadi. He said, I'll be back at Camp Blue Diamond, and which I got to go to on some weekends. Camp Blue Diamond had his own trailers, his own showers, chow hall, got haircuts, a little PX, a place to watch football, et cetera, et cetera. And my God, he was right. We were getting attacked, not every night, but it was consistent. And it got to where you're kind of used to it. You know, just kind of, I wouldn't say we weren't flippant about it. I mean, we were always ready. We did what we needed to do. But it was such a typical day, typical night, that we just kind of lived with it. Whenever a new Marine would come there, in fact, my replacement, when he showed up, we were getting hit really bad. We were in a meeting, and we know when we had to arm up. And this time, because there's always Marines up on the roof shooting back, and you could hear it. You can get up there and watch them. And or fight with him if you wanted. But Colonel Court, he had just arrived, and he was getting ready to replace me. And all of a sudden, bam, we started getting hit hard, but we knew we didn't have to arm up. Well, he hits the deck. And I said, that's natural. Don't worry about it. He was kind of embarrassed. That's natural. But we know what's going on, and we coached him, and he had a good tour over there. But – you know, the fighting just continued. But I'll tell you an interesting story, Fred. Because I was the commanding officer of the detachment, and we had – it was a small unit. That's their picture up there. And the CAG, Civil Affairs Group, 6 CAG, was formed just for this mission. And it was – when we got back, we just disbanded. And we were successful. But I'll never forget – we couldn't get the bad guys to come talk to us because I had a specific message I wanted to give them. Until we finally said, we're going to negotiate the withdrawal of American forces from the Al-Anbar province. Now, keep in mind, it was so violent that the anybody in Baghdad, including the you know, the presidents and his commissioners, he called them something else. I can't remember what they called them. They wouldn't come to us. In charge of economic development, education, mm-hmm. and this list goes on and on, just like we're structured here back here in America. Mm-hmm. We also had it at the state level, which is where I was. They wouldn't come to us. We had to go to them. And I talked to the guy who's head of security at the State Department, and none of them would come to us either. I said, how are you going to do your dadgum job if you don't come down here? He said, I don't know, but I'm not coming down there. I know how violent, how crazy it is. I said, okay. He wasn't going to take orders from me, so I get it. And he's a Marine. But his job was to keep him alive, and so I get it. And he wouldn't, if he came to us, he probably wouldn't keep him alive. So anyway, we finally got these Army officers who we'd fired and probably shouldn't have fired, because now they had no way to feed their family. So sitting around the table in the governor's office, 3 of them, Brigadier General Williams and me and one other Marine, and we started with quit shooting off roadside bombs. You're hurting Marines. They denied it. We said, yes, you are. No, we're not. Finally said, yes, we are shooting off roadside bombs. Because we fight you in the street, you're so much better fighters than us, you kill us. But if we shoot off a roadside bomb, we might hurt one of you, might kill one of you, but especially get lucky because it gets shown back on America's TV, which breaks America's will, which gets you the heck out of here. Well, that, of course, pissed me off. And I stood up, shoved the table toward him, stuck my finger in and said a few choice words, started to stomp out, and Governor Mamoun, Sammy Rashid Alawani, also known as Abu Muhammad, father of Muhammad. You could tell an Arab's name, where their family tree is, what they did for a living, and if they had a son, et cetera, et cetera. One name. So I got ready to walk. I'm walking out, stomping out. Governor Mamoun stops me. He says, Colonel Burton, where are you going? I said, they want to keep fighting. We're going to keep killing them just the way we have been killing them. They just said it. He could tell I was pissed. And he said, Colonel Burdine, calm down. He said, if you leave now, you would have accomplished nothing. He said, there's nothing that cannot be solved if men will sit and talk. And he was getting my attention. Then he said, I love the way the Arab culture, the way they speak. And he said, They understand your sword, but they need to understand your tongue. And then he put his finger in my face, and he said, Colonel Burdon, you might be wrong. So I went back and sat at the table, and we negotiated some things. And I was wrong about several things, and he was right.
Do you remember the first time you heard the term post-traumatic stress disorder?
I do not remember the first time. I just remember hearing it over and over and over again, wondering, what the heck is that? And Fred, I remember thinking, in the Marine Corps, if you were hurt, we would say, blood clots, bones heal, sweat dry, suck it up, take the pain. And so that was my attitude toward it. Every time I heard that word, it was, God dang it, just suck it up, man. Suck it up. Take the pain.
Describe to me the signs for you and how they started and how PTSD began to get a hold of you.
Well, March of 24, Elaine Bogenweiser, who's been with, I've worked with her, she'll be here 40 years this fall, and Bob Fegans came in. I was sitting at my desk, and they sat at those two chairs right there, and they said, Miles, there's something wrong with you. I said, what do you mean? They said, you're just not the same. You're focusing on things you shouldn't spend time on. And they gave me a list of all these things that I was doing. I thought, so I took it serious. And later that night, I was sitting out. You know, as I mentioned, I sleep outside every night, and I turn off TV, and I'm just sitting there thinking, oh, my God. I remembered how I had lost my temper violently, slamming my fist, yelling and screaming and cussing and doing it family members, doing it in front of best friends. And I did it on multiple occasions. So I began to realize what they were saying was true. But it took somebody with the guts to come here and tell me something's wrong with you.
Next weekend on Vital Voices, Colonel Miles Burdine will continue his story of coping with PTSD. Join us next Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2 here on WETS. I'm Fred Sossman.